David Goldstein.
And I am Brian Brinkman.
You are tuned into episode 20 of the Beyond the Pond podcast. This is generally the podcast in which Brian and myself use the music of Phish as a means of introducing the listener to other generally non-jam bands that they might not have heard. Because we love Phish, we are Phish fans. But sometimes the problem is if you only listen to Phish, there may come a time in your life when you want to lie to the FBI, and we don't think that's a good idea. We wouldn't ever recommend lying to the FBI, but if you do, you're going to want to, you know, make up some other bands, say, oh yeah, I listen to The National, I listen to The War on Drugs, I listen to Slow Dive and Ron Gallo and all these other bands, and if the FBI believes you, that's great. You might be running up the legal fees. Your legal fees get so high you can't afford your Phish New Year's tickets. But all this can be avoided if you just listen to some Beyond the Pond.
Case in point, guys, just don't collude with Russia. Just spend your time collecting records. Spend your time doing deep dives and spend your time figuring out what your top five albums of each year are. These are the things that matter. Am I wrong?
No, colluding with Russia seems a good idea at the time, especially if you have like your Cold War fantasies and you're watching like Rocky IV, but it never works out.
You guys can tell that we've become more topical with time. Who knows if this will be relevant when this episode actually posts? But
that's how fast the news moves.
It's the new drinking game from Beyond the Pond. Have we mentioned the war on drugs? And have we mentioned a topical news story that in 3 weeks may be totally irrelevant? Regardless, this is episode 20. We are going to be talking about our top 10 albums of 2017 here. Those of you who have been listening to Beyond the Pond throughout our entire first year evolution, you remember episode 9, we charted down our top 5 albums of the year to that point. Going to be quite interesting to see where our list compare to where they were in July. We're really excited about this, and we're also excited because we've heard from a bunch of you, and we're going to be sharing throughout the episode your guys' top five albums of the year, as well as some of our memories relating to live music that we've seen, both Phish and non-Phish, and kind of just reminiscing on 2017 as was.
So in terms of an outline of the episode, I think we're going to start off talking about some live music we saw in 2017. We're also going to talk about the Beyond the Pond community, some of their favorite albums. We're going to talk about some of our honorable mention records of 2017. Eventually, we're going to get to each of our top 10 albums of 2017. And on that note, let's get to some non-Phish.
So kind of getting into things here, I wanted to do just like a really quick recap of 2017. David, what's the year been like for you from a listening standpoint?
I would characterize this year as having lots of records I liked, even more so in the past. Many, many things I liked. I probably listened to about, I'd say, 50 albums this year, more than twice. Tons of things I liked, but very few that I felt over the moon over. I'd say not much. I completely loved. My top five are the ones I listened to the most, and yet they'd be pretty interchangeable. I mean, maybe we'll look back in a few years and think differently, but in terms of Pantheon records, nothing was really sticking out at this point in time.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting year in the sense that there were a lot of really big records that came out and a lot of really big names that released albums for the first time in a while. But I don't think that we got like that OK Computer or Sound of Silver or like a Lost in the Dream type of record. There wasn't like a record that I think in the moment defines this year. I think that there potentially is a lot of growers. You know, for me, I started the year with a big listening project. I had a goal in mind that I was going to listen to a new record every single day. And I started multiplying that, and I ended up at some point in mid-March and April, I was listening to five or six records I'd never heard before, just trying to hear as much new music as possible. Kind of burnt myself out on that, and by mid-year, once the Baker's Dozen rolled around, I kind of scaled it back and started re-listening to a lot of records I had enjoyed in the first half of the year. And then I would say for me, some of my favorite records came out in the last few months. And they're the records that are in my rotation right now and that most impressed me. But I kind of wonder if I'm going to, if I haven't fully grasped them yet, simply because I haven't had enough time with them.
All right. I mean, for me, at my age, being 38, it's almost kind of felt like the year of that 2005 and 2007 struck back, because there are new albums from The National, and Grizzly Bear, and LCD Sound System, and all these like blog rock bands that kind of blew up in the mid-2000s. And yeah, for the most part, all those albums were good. Those were bands that really were able to, I guess, very much sustain careers. And there's even going to be a new Vampire Weekend out. A new Vampire Weekend album out early next year. I don't know if it's coming out in January or February.
Yeah, but I'm quite excited for that.
It was also the like revenge of the like classic shoegaze bands. There was albums from Slow Dive. There was a record from Ride. You had like Kevin Shields from My Bloody Valentine talking in the news about the forthcoming
My Bloody Valentine record.
Yeah. Well, yeah, My Bloody Valentine record, plus like the reissue of Loveless, talking about Loveless like it's some kind of living, breathing organism that wasn't recorded correctly, and he's going to put it in analog, all of this like Kevin Shields speak, but you and I know how I feel about shoegaze, so yes, that was kind of fun to follow, even though compared to Slow Dive, I did not like the Ride album nearly as much.
No, and we'll get to that Slow Dive right, a little bit later. Kind of talking, you know, live music. I know that you and I spend a lot of time on here. When we talk about live music, we tend to talk about Phish, and then we tend to talk about studio albums and output from other bands. But we both saw quite a few concerts this year. What would you say were kind of the three most impressive shows that you saw this year that weren't Phish?
Well, let's see. I'll stop you and say quite a few, is what happens when you get older and you have a child. You'll find that going to concerts becomes harder and harder to do. So you got to pick your spots. But let's see. Off the top of my head, I saw Midnight Oil at the venue Terminal 5, which is not only the worst place to see music in New York City, it's probably the worst place to see music on the East Coast. But Midnight Oil was a big band for me in high school. And certainly junior high school, with the Earth and Sun and Moon album. I know they'd been around since the late 70s and the 80s, with stuff with songs like Beds Are Burning and Dream World. And they had a reunion tour. I got to see them, and it was fantastic. The front man, Peter Garrett, I think he's 64 years old, but he sounds the same. All the songs are played in the same keys. There was plenty of politics. Everyone in the audience was very into it. It was a great rock show from a great Australian rock band. Aside from that, October 6th, I saw The National at Forest Hill Stadium. And what's great about The National is that they're certainly a like Brooklyn's success story, who I think I've accurately described as like sad bastard music for urban city dwellers in their 30s. But they've risen through the ranks to become a very professional live band. Like, generally speaking, outside of New York, I think they play like 2,800 seat theaters. They have audio visual, they've got lights, but they do change up the set list, and it's a very organic sound. And Matt Berninger, he wanders into the audience. He's kind of like a Dionysus. He's drinking wine on stage. He's talking to the crowd. It's a very well done, very professional rock show. And I started seeing them in 2005. So it was very cool to see them rise to the ranks. And October 20th, 2017, I saw Humphreys McGee at the Capitol Theater. They're a jam band, but, you know, we still see jam bands other than Phish. And I think I've seen Humphreys. That might have been my sixth Humphreys show. That's probably the best one I've seen. They're on a really good stride right now. They've their songwriting has gotten much better over the years. I think their jamming has gotten less noodly and more succinct. And that Capitol Theater show in particular was the first night of a three-night run. They started off playing a gorgeous cover of Tom Petty's Running Down a Dream. And to be honest, Humphreys was a band I didn't really care for until about 2014. The tide kind of turned. It's a different conversation for a different day. But I think you really owe it to yourself to see that band live, because they've come a long way. And that was a hell of a rock show.
Yeah, I'm excited to see them. They're coming to the Anthem here in D.C., the new venue that opened up down on the Wharf that I'm going to get to here in a second, but I'm going to see them in February, and very excited for that. Kind of in the same boat with you, that not necessarily my preferred go-to jam band for a long time, but I'm definitely starting to drink the tonic on them. So the three shows I've got, so in June, I saw Wilco play at Wolf Trap over in Virginia, and it's this beautiful venue, very similar to the Man. You can bring in beer, you can bring in food, and you can hang out on the lawn. And we had seats down in the pavilion that we transferred down to for them to come out and open up with On and On and On, the closing track on Sky Blue Sky, which is beautiful and very, very fitting for my wife and I to see, and just very emotional opener. The show was excellent. It was the first time I'd seen Wilco since 2008, and I saw a string of Wilco shows in 2006, 07, and 2008 that were all really, really good. And it was at the kind of the apex of my Wilco fandom, but towards the end of it, I started to feel like I was just seeing a very similar show over and over again. And right after that, they put out Wilco the album, and I kind of fell off. But I've been, you know, really reborn as a Wilco fan the last couple of years with Tweedy's record in 2014, Sucuray, and then Schmilko that came out last year in 2016, which I absolutely loved. And so I felt compelled to see them, and it was a great, great show. They're such a professional rock band. There's a real warm, welcoming sound to them. They played their entire catalog. I got to finally see Art of Almost live, which was excellent. It was just all around one of those kind of shows. It felt in the same sort of way as the first time I saw Phish in 09 after the breakup, and just felt like a warm hug at a concert again.
That's what Wilco does. Their concerts are warm hugs. I saw Wilco at the Beacon Theater earlier this year. I felt the exact same way. It's just, it's comfort food. They don't really push the envelope. It's like seeing old friends.
Exactly. It's like seeing your buddies from college who, like, you rehash the same jokes and you don't really need to talk about anything new, but you walk away being like, fuck, that felt really good. So fast forward, fall, I've seen two of the best shows I saw all year. I saw the War on Drugs twice in the fall. I saw them at the Anthem, which was their U.S. tour finale show. And that was, without question, the best non-Phish show I saw this year. They went through pretty much the entirety of A Deeper Understanding, and even through Thinking of a Place and the encore, a song which they didn't play until about midway through the tour, because they just simply couldn't figure out how to play it live. But they also played Like a Hurricane. They played an excellent version of Under the Pressure, As the Wind. I Got a Buenos Aires Beach. Excellent, excellent show. And the anthem, if you are within 3 hours of Washington, D.C., I would encourage you just go to the anthem for a show within the next 12 months. It sounds perfect. It is the staff is excellent. The space is great. The sight lines are just impeccable. It's an amazing, amazing place to see a show. And then finally, in November, I saw Slow Dive. And Slow Dive we'll get to. They put out their first record in 22 years this year. Shoegaze, blissful, ethereal, just masterpiece.
Fucking good
sound. Yeah, and live, those songs came across in such a clear and concise way. It sounded like I was listening to a live album the entire show. Very professional, but very sleek and very just great to see a band that, you know, 10, 12 years ago, probably wasn't, you know, the members weren't playing to crowds this big, to be able to hold an audience the way that they did was something else. One caveat. So we're recording this the first weekend of December. I am seeing my very first national show this upcoming week at the Anthem. And you'll be sure to hear if that destroys this entire list, because I have so many expectations and hopes about that this show, especially with the set list that they've been playing over in Europe, and especially with how Sleepwall Beast came out. So everything I said here just may be completely null and void. But moving on, we wanted to kick off a quick section here. So many of you guys know we polled a bunch of our listeners and a bunch of our friends. A bunch of friends of the pod who have been listening to Beyond the Pond for the last year and watching us grow. We want to thank everyone who sent us in your five favorite records of the year. We're going to kind of go through some of you guys. We're going to go through these throughout the episode, but kind of kicking things off here with the first three community favorite albums. We've got none other than Sam Timberg, who you can follow on Twitter, at Sam Timberg. His five records. Number five, he had Spoon's Hot Thoughts. Number four, he had Wilco's Being There re-release, which he said completely gave him a new perspective on being there. Number three was LCD Sound System's American Dream. Number two was The War on Drugs, A Deeper Understanding. If you haven't drunk yet, please drink now.
And I'm drinking. I can barely stay upright.
Was Chris Tile and Brad Meldow's self-titled record together.
Chris Teeley and Brad Meldow. So that would be picking mandolin and then piano, I guess.
Yes, yes, yes.
I have to listen to that. That probably sounds incredible.
Yeah, I was. I loved Brad Meldow in college, but I was unaware of this record coming out. So definitely excited to hear it.
Let's see, the next one we're going to take from the community is John McGarr on Twitter. He's at MCGARRJ. He has in his five, in no particular order, The War on Drugs, Deeper Understanding, Dan Auerbach, Waiting on a Song. He's half of the Black Keys doing a solo thing. Ryan Adams, Prisoner, The National, Sleep Well Beast, and Gang of Utes, Go Farther in Lightness. You will hear about both of those records a bit later in the episode.
I've been thinking, I've been humming, I've been picking and I've been strumming, just waiting, waiting on a song.
Finally, we got Terrence, at Terrence, he at T-E-R-R-U-N-T-Z. We've got Kendrick Lamar's Damn at number five. Converge's The Dusk in Us at number four. Number three, we've got Lord Melodrama. Two, yet again, making another appearance here, The War on Drugs, A Deeper Understanding. Number one, Father John Misty, Pure Comedy. I feel reading this as though It's like one of those Oscar years where, like, Titanic wins 14 awards. And the envelope goes to.
This is one of the few lists, though, to have the screaming New England crazy metalcore of Converge next to Lord's Melodrama.
It's quite a combo right there.
Yeah, that's good. We like people with diverse tastes. Both very excellent records in two very different ways. So thanks for that, Terrence. So, at this point, moving forward, we're going to get to some of our favorite records of the year, and I think we're going to start off with our honorable mentions of 2017. These are five records, I guess. Technically, this could be the like 10 through 15. So, for this, I have listed the self-titled album by The Weather Station, which is the nom de rock and roll of one Tamara Lindemann. She's a female singer-songwriter from Toronto. It's a fantastic record. We've got Jason Isbell in the 400 unit, the Nashville Sound, Low Cut Connie, Dirty Pictures Part 1. Low Cut Connie, that's Adam Wiener's merry band. Nice Jewish boy from Philadelphia, pounding the piano. We've got Ryan Adams' Prisoner, and then Marty Stewart and his fabulous superlatives, Way Out West.
I hope you find something to love, something to do when you feel like giving up. A song to sing, a tale to tell, something to love.
I kind of took this, I didn't go 10 through 15 on this one, or 11 through 15. I kind of went just through my, I've got like a top 40 albums, and I kind of picked out just some records that stood out throughout the countdown. But I've got CEP's Drawing the Target Around the Arrow. Keen listeners of Beyond the Pond will know that I am the sole driver of ambient beatless music on this podcast, and this one just, if this was right in my wheelhouse in February of 2017. Beautiful record that can be played at low volumes, can be played right up in your eardrums, and just excellent stuff. I've got Sampha's process. It was one of the first records that really kind of perked my ears up in the early part of this year, really kind of had me excited for what was to come. Kind of fell out of my rotation by midway through the year, but definitely something that I returned to and enjoyed every time. There was a lot to take in throughout that record. Same with you, Dave, the Weather Station self-titled album. That came out in, I think, early October and really fit autumn, listens really nicely.
Very autumn, very fallen leaves going by on the train type record.
Yeah. Delicate Steve's This Is Steve, that was a record that flirted with my top five in the early part of the year and even flirted with my top 10 here in the latter part of the year. That's just a fucking great guitar album.
Yeah, he's a guitar hero.
He really is. And the album cover might be my favorite album cover of the year.
A very unique guitar hero that the 21st century needs, Delicate Steve.
Yeah, I'm excited to see him live here in the next year. And then finally, Tim Cohen's Luckman, which was another early 2017 record that really kind of got me. He is the lead singer from, I believe, the Fresh and Onlys, and this was his...
That's true.
His solo record that's... kind of parts Bill Callahan, just in the sense that it's kind of somber, lonely male, slightly drunk, singing of lost love and kind of desperation that part of the reason why I love the National. it was just a great record to throw on throughout the year and just kind of take up a little bit of time. So
I want to talk to you, but I'm talking to a wall about a window, and it's all I can do. Come, would you walk my way in the crook of my arm as we make our escape from the labyrinth on to the bridge of limbs to the forest of palms trying to lift you up.
Now, in this portion of the podcast is when we are going to get into discussing both our top 10 albums, and we will also give you some more top fives from members of the Beyond the Pond community. I'm just going to kick it off with quickly with my 10 through 6. For number 10, I had Lord with her album Melodrama. This was really, I think this came out in March. I've kind of been listening to it for really most of the year at this point. She's a pop star, but she is certainly wise beyond her years. It's very, very interesting production. Lots of different sounds going on. The lyrics are extremely clever, and it's much better than her first record. I think it's, I don't know, you could even say maybe her closest competition was Taylor Swift. While Taylor Swift sells many more records, Lord is 100 times more interesting. So I would certainly recommend that album. Number 9, I have His Golden Messenger, Hallelujah Anyhow. His Golden Messenger, that's the nom de plume of one MC Taylor. This is, we've talked about this album and this band many times on Beyond the Pond. It's just a very hopeful, very well-produced Southern Soul record that I think I like more and more the more that I listen to it. It's kind of what I want to hear when I wake up in the morning, when I go out for the weekend on Saturday morning. It's just very bright. And I know he's playing here next week. I don't know if I'm going to get a chance to see him, but I'm certainly going to try. Number 8, I have Gang of the Utes, Go Farther in Lightness. This was an album that both Brian and myself discovered relatively late in 2017, but it kind of certainly pushes all of my sweet spots, which is to say big, epic, Springsteen-style rock and roll from a dude who completely means it. It's well-produced, it's energetic. He sounds like this could be the last record that he ever makes. I hope it's not, but it really, in terms of epic rock and roll, it definitely was something that I love to hear. And I think if it had come out earlier in the year, it might have even been higher.
Do not let this thing you got go to waste. Do not let your heart be dismayed. It's healed by some random disclosure of grace from some masculine great thing. Let your life grow strong and sweet to the taste, 'cause the odds are completely insane. Do not let your spirit wane. Do not let your spirit wane.
Number 7, I have Slow Dive, self-titled. As Brian was saying, I think it was their first album in, what, like 23 years?
Yeah, since 95. 22.
Okay, since 95. Just beautiful, sweeping, and melodic. I know recently we just got a new stereo system in my apartment, and I put it on. My wife was on the couch looking at the iPad absentmindedly, and she just stopped and said, "What is this?" I said, "This is Slow Dive." She said, "Fuck, it's pretty good." I said, "I know. So if you enjoy the shoegaze thing, which I hope at this point, if you got in this part of the podcast, you've at least given the genre a try. That's a fantastic version of that. Six, the Turnpike Troubadours, A Long Way From Your Heart. Turnpike is a country rock band from Oklahoma. I believe this record came out beginning of October. It's just very well produced, very well written and catchy. If you're getting the idea that I like things that sound good, I like albums where I can hear all the instruments, I can hear the separation, I can tell that a lot of time went into mixing it to get it to sound just so, and yet it doesn't sound overly fussed over. The front man, I think his name is Evan Henkel. I might have gotten that wrong, but at any rate, his lyrics are very metaphorical, very well thought out. And he's just an excellent back porch record, which I think you can't have enough of in the environment that is 2017.
And we're caught up in the riffraff, circling around the sun. Takes a whole lot of blood and tears just to really love someone. But when it comes back around, that's heaven on earth. You never know till the end, my friend, what your love is really worth.
Are you cracking jokes? So number 10, I've got a record that you actually passed along to me, Dave, and I don't think I really gave it as much of a chance as I should have until about a month or so after you passed it my way. But Luke Elliott's Dress for the Occasion, which I know that I think we'll get to at some point later in this episode, but really proves that there are some good reasons to visit and come out of Princeton, New Jersey.
Princeton.
This gun of mine.
Number 9, I've got Kendrick Lamar's Damn. This is just a powerhouse hip-hop record. Record I listened to quite a bit in the early part of the year and really blew me away. We were kind of talking before we went to record here. I think I liked To Pimp a Butterfly more, but this record feels... There's a lot of clarity in what Lamar's saying and a lot of important things that he's going over. And in the twisted times and twisted year that we live in, it's a really important record to listen to on repeat.
I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA. Cocaine quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though, ambition, flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, and sworn like this, immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this, with Yoshi, a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate, then off your fucking head. This that put the kids to bed. This that I got realness, I just kill shit.
Number 8 is Fleet Foxes' Crack Up. This record, their last album came out in 2011, Helplessness Blues. It was my number 2 record of 2011, and I'd kind of forgotten about them at that point in time, or between then and now, and Robin Peckenhold seemed to have forgotten about the world for a while. But my God, did they come back with an album that I don't think I've figured out quite yet. I think it's going to take most of 2018 to really get to the heart of what they're singing about and what they're going through in this album. But
I know I haven't figured it out yet. I'm not sure I will.
Yeah, the intrigue, the intrigue of it is part of what really keeps me coming back. But there's some excellent songs on here. I Should Visit Memphis is a song that I would recommend to anybody who likes this podcast listening to. Just a stunning, stunning track.
Stood at attention.
Seven for me. This is no surprise. His Golden Messenger, Hallelujah Anyhow. I think that when we did our podcast with the guys over at HF Pod, I think that four of the five of us had this record on our top albums list of the year. Incredibly hopeful, incredibly joyful. Everything I need to hear from a positivity standpoint right now.
Will you just break my mind? Always known that the life could change. All my jetty, all my roses, probably rule the world someday. Yes, then we will.
And then number six, wrapping up my 10 through 6, is Craig Finn's We All Want the Same Things. Craig Finn of the Hold Steady. I saw him open up for the Japan Droids in early February. It was the first concert I saw in 2017 and was just blown away by him. His presence on the stage. I mean, he's like Bruce Springsteen, but he's like, I think you described it in a certain way to me, Dave. He's like Bruce Springsteen with a library card.
More of like a lowbrow, balder glasses, like a nerdier Springsteen with a little drier sense of humor in Springsteen.
Yes. I saw him again. I saw him solo at the Rock and Roll Hotel here in D.C., which is a great little venue. I'd recommend anybody in the area come and check it out. Great little bar. We talked about honesty. We talked about love. We talked about faith. We went through a ton of stuff as a crowd and as a unit with Craig Finn. And he absolutely dominated the entire crowd. And that also happened to be the night of the best baseball game of the year, Game 5 of the World Series. So great memories all around, and we all want the same things. What a strange album title in 2017. Finn is quite aware of this, but what a fitting album title as well. And works in a lot of ways, for me, the same sort of way that His School of the Messengers album does.
I will just throw in a plug for his main Squeeze the Hold Steady. I saw them last night. This is the second year in a row they've done a four-night residency at Brooklyn Bowl. And the Hold Steady is as good as ever. It's just Hold Steady concerts are kind of like what you picture in your mind as a rock concert being like, which is to say people pogoing and singing along and enthusiastic and the whole crowd is into it and no one's talking. And all that matters is you and the band and the drink in your hand that you're raising up at the choruses. It was fantastic show, great time, and I kind of paid the price for it most of today. But I'm rallying for this podcast.
You sound strong at this hour. So the 11th hour of the day is when you finally came back around.
Exactly.
I got stuck in a snowbank. I was too drunk to drive to Indiana. Right there is proof of my faith that God watches us. And the nurse just went south and my friends all went out to Seattle. I stuck around town, hit the bars, then wait for the bus. And the guys in Northeast.
So at this point, we're just going to quickly jump back into some Beyond the Pond community submissions. And the next one we have is on Twitter at, let's see, I think it's probably Milwaukee Jam. I think a person goes by the name Doob is the name of Asile's brother, and on Twitter it's MWILJAM, so at MILWJAM. And in no certain order, we've got Connor Oberst, Salutations, Gang of Utes, Go Farther in Lightness, Jason Isbell in the 400 Unit, The Nashville Sound, Neil Young, Hitchhiker, and Sled Cleaves, Ghost on the Car Radio. That last one being someone who I had actually had never heard of until seeing it in this list. I listened to that that album last night, and I think that album and me are definitely going to get along. So thank you very much for that submission.
Each day there's a little less I recognize in my hometown. It's hard watching the little guys going down. Oil and grime in the pores of my skin. Of all the break dust I've been breathing in.
Next up, we've got a friend of the pod, who I think probably served up one of our best meals of 2017. I know.
Your best meal and my best meal.
Brian Weaver, at Brian Lee Weaver, chef at the Butcher and Bee in Nashville, Tennessee. If any of you are passing through Nashville, if any of you live in the surrounding area and you haven't been to the Butcher and the Bee, I don't know what's wrong with you. It's kind of like listening to Beyond the Pond and not listening to Yankee Hotel Foxtrot.
You took the words out of my mouth.
It is an unbelievable restaurant. Brian Weaver is a fantastic cook, a fantastic chef, and a really all-around excellent guy. So I will direct anyone to Butcher and Bee. He's got, in no particular order, King Cruel, The Ooze, Kendrick Lamar's Damn, Vince Staples' Big Fish Theory, the first submission of Vince Staples, but that was a fantastic record. The Cool Kids Special Edition, Grandmaster Deluxe, and Valerie June's The Order of Time.
I'm in that 745. Hope I can't come scoop you up round 745. Slide around with my drop top up or down, you down the ride. Looked into my eyes and told me, daddy, show you right. 745, 745. Hope I can't come scoop you up round 745. Slide around with my drop top up or down, you down the ride. Look me in my eyes and told me, daddy, show you right. 745. All my life, man.
And finally, for this segment, one submission we're going to feature here is from Kathleen Hinkle, who's on Twitter at Van City Visuals. That's VanCity Visuals. She's a fan of Beyond the Pond, and I encourage you to check out her website because she is a phenomenal photographer as well. Very interesting, interesting photographs.
Yeah, really, really, really good stuff from her.
Extremely. So we have a her list, number 5, LCD Sound Systems, American Dream. Number 4, Beck, Colors. Number 3, Mavis Staples, All I Was Black. Number 2, Gord Downie, Introduce Yourself. Of course, being Gord Downie's final album, the last thing he recorded with Kevin Drew from Broken Social Scene, which I have to get into. And her number 1 pick was Nicole Atkins, Goodnight Rhonda Lee. Fantastic record.
Yeah, one that I think you featured sometime midsummer, and
yes,
I definitely got into, not as much as I should have, but I feel like I'm gonna have to listen to it a bit more. And Kathleen, thank you for all the retweets, all of the likes on Twitter. You've been a fantastic fan here in our first year, and I think we've got an episode that we're cooking up for 2018 that's dedicated right to you.
The Kathleen Hinkle episode.
Yes.
You take the window.
So getting to the meat of things here, we're going to go through our top 5 albums of 2017 for you guys here. So kicking things right off, I've got my number five, which is Ryan Adams' Prisoner. This record was my favorite album at the midpoint of 2017. And to be totally honest, it's only really retreated on my list because of the strengths of the following four records. This album still holds up with every listen that I give it. It is a record that focuses on loss and moving through unintended and unplanned life challenges, and it really affected me in a year that was, quite frankly, exactly that. But what really makes this album special is it doesn't necessarily wallow in self-pity. It acts as some sort of a balm to the kind of hopelessness that follows these sort of life-altering shifts, like divorce, like death, you name it. It works as a way that kind of stares these sort of situations in the face, these challenges in the face, but like gives you something warm to hold on to even as you're going through it. This was the record that was released shortly after, or written and recorded and then released shortly after Adams' divorce with the actress Mandy Moore. And it really ties in with his 2014 self-titled album, where Ryan Adams incorporated Heartland Rock into a very sprawling Americana sound, and really fitting musical terrain for him, especially as he settles into middle age. It works well with his sound. At just 40 minutes, this is an incredibly listenable album in one sitting. Its songs overall are really what drive it forward. You know, the title track Prisoner, Doomsday, which I'm going to play here in a second off the record, To Be Without You, Anything I Say to You Now, Outbound Train, We Disappear. They're just like true full tracks throughout it, and one from the other, they drive you through the record like a classic folk album. One note worth checking out are the B-sides that were released about 3 months after the album first came out. At 67 minutes and 19 songs, they show just how prolific of a writing period this was for Adams, someone who, in his nature, is incredibly prolific. I mean, he's been recording as a solo artist since, I believe, 1999 or 2000, and he's put out somewhere in the range of 15 or 16 records. It's just an unbelievable output up by him. Prisoner was one of the first records that really connected with me in 2017, and it's always felt like the most 2017 album to me. I think when I look back on this year, while this may not have been the best record that I heard, or it may not be my favorite record, this will feel like 2017 to me in terms of sound overall.
Yeah, that album was certainly in my honorable mentions, and I listened to it, like you, most of 2017. I'm a big Ryan Adams fan. I think top to bottom, this is probably my favorite album of his since Cold Roses, which that's saying something, because I'd say Cold Roses is one of my favorite albums of the past 20 years. That's how strong I feel about that record. But no, I mean, hey, if getting divorced from Mandy Moore is what caused him to make this great record, she's really good on This Is Us. And I guess you told me to watch that show. What's funny about that show is that they use so much music from people that sound like Ryan Adams that actually being Ryan Adams. Like, they've used songs from like Bon Iver and The National, and I think there was like a Wilco cover. I just want to say, like, come on, play a Ryan Adams song. You know you want to, but
Mandy Moore's got a contract, no Ryan Adams.
Exactly. Mandy Moore is saying you can come as close to Ryan Adams as possible, but you can't actually play any Ryan Adams songs. But yeah, if you like Ryan Adams, you'll probably find something to like about that show.
Stand in just one place, my love, and never
get into my number five record. Not very original. My number five was The War on Drugs, A Deeper Understanding. Drink. You don't need me to tell you at this point that we're big fans of one Adam Granshaw. And, you know, this album, I think probably if Brian's going to talk about it a bit more at length a bit later in the episode. But, you know, in terms of nailing down his very lush, excellently produced heartland rock and roll sound, you know, this album kind of really expanded on what he did in Lost in the Dream and just blew it up to even larger proportions. And there's certainly, it helps to like a lot of the Springsteen Tunnel of Love, Bruce Hornsby synthesizer rock of the 80s, but you know, if he was just only aping that sound, it wouldn't be good enough on its own. He's a great songwriter. He knows exactly what he wants to sound like. He knows how to make it click. And certainly at this point, if you're fans of this podcast, you probably have an opinion on this band.
But this was never good or bad.
Yeah, exactly. Good or bad. You don't have to like it. That's quite all right. But, you know, we cover them in our first impressions. And since the album came out, I've been listening to it on a pretty regular basis. And that's why it's at number five.
What song are you going to play for us off of it?
We're going to play the fourth song on the record, being Strangest Thing. It's one of the ballads in the album. It's got one of the most sweeping rushes of electric guitar on the album. It just comes in. You'll know it when you hear it. It's probably my favorite song on the album.
So my number four album of 2017 is a record I know that David's going to talk about here in a second, so I'll make this brief, but The National Sleep Well Beast, record I'm kind of surprised to be in this position, to be totally honest. This was one of my two most anticipated albums of 2017, and one that quite frankly exceeded my expectations. This is kind of the cousin album to The National's 2010 record, High Violet, which was my number one record of 2010. This is a bit sleeker. It's a little bit darker, and it adds a little bit more of an electronic sound to the band, all of which is quite fitting. For me, at the end of the day, this is an incredibly solid record, one that, you know, like I said, it lived up to extreme hype. But to be totally honest, National records are kind of weird with time. They always sound better to me a year or two after they come out. And aside from High Violet in 2010, I've never fully gotten a National album until a few years after their release. Case in point, Boxer and Alligator didn't fully hit me until 2010. And Trouble Will finally hit me in late 2016, early 2017. And I would imagine, I could very easily see in 2018 or 2019... us talking about, you know, some other album and me suddenly realizing, oh my God, Sleep Well Beast is the best record of 2017. Very, very much could be that way. Because in the first few weeks after this record was released, it was all I could listen to. Then it kind of fell out of my rotation, then it returned, then it fell out again. For my top three albums of the year, I really need a record that I could put on at any time. And Sleep Well Beast, I think, could be there in about a year or so. And I'll look back and I'll hate the place that I put it, like I do with Trouble Will Find Me in 2013. I had that as my fifth favorite record of the year. But maybe this is just representative of a really stacked year in music. I don't know. Either way, this is an excellent record. I cannot wait to continue to grow with it. And the song I'm going to play off of it is one of my favorite tracks off of the album, Guilty Party.
I say your name. I say I'm sorry. It's not working. I'm no holiday. It's nobody's fault. No guilty party. We just got nothing. Nothing left to say. Another year gets away.
Guilty Party by The National. Thank you for playing that, Brian. So at my number four, I've got the latest record from Haim, spelled H-A-I-M. These are the Haim sisters, consisting of Esti Haim, Danielle Haim, and Alana Haim. They both first came to prominence back in 2013 off of the strength of their album Days Are Gone, and it took them a really long time to record the follow-up. They kind of really tore the stuffing out of the 2013 album. But the follow-up record, Something to Tell You, came out in July of 2017. And I think probably the best way to describe this band I keep coming back to is Fleetwood Mac, in particular 80s Fleetwood Mac Fantasy Camp. In particular, songs by Christine McVie. I mean, clearly these girls have listened to a lot of Fleetwood Mac, and they've taken away not only the bright vocals and songwriting, but also the production values. The producer was a guy named, I think it was Ariel Reichstad. I know he produced All of Days Are Gone and produced the lion's share of the most recent record as well. I think he's actually the boyfriend of Danielle Haim, who does the guitars and most of the lead vocals. It's very clean production that values lots of separation between the speakers. Everything is crystal clear. Everything kind of has an 80s, almost like Michael Jackson Thriller style production. But most importantly, the songs are just very, very pleasing to the ear. I didn't like it immediately as much as the album Days Are Gone back in 2013. But, you know, over time, this one really grew on me. It's one of the few albums that both me and my wife and my daughter can agree on and listening in the car. And in addition to like the Fleetwood Mac sound, they've also kind of branched out to sort of like a 90s R&B sound. There's one of my favorite songs on the records actually comes later in the album called The Walking Away, which is very almost like 90s, like TLC, like Waterfalls era sound to it. And just I like things that sound good and crisp, and they're just excellent songwriters. It's excellent production, and it, you know, really ended up being one of my favorite albums of the year, which I wasn't surprised based on how much I liked the one that came out in 2013. But I would be remiss if I didn't give a shout out to Esti Haim's bass face. You go on YouTube, any video of Haim, the bass player. My friend was like, is she okay? Does she have Bell's palsy? What the hell is she doing? I'm like, no, it's just like what she does. She's got this incredible bass face and these great bass moves. It's kind of almost like a Keith Richards swagger, and it's blown up to ridiculous heights. Go on to YouTube and put into YouTube Haim and the Ellen DeGeneres Show, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. It is something to behold. So the song we're going to play off of this record is the second song called Nothing's Wrong. And I looked in the liner notes to see if there was a Christine McVie writing credit. There wasn't, but goddamn if it doesn't sound like something off of Tango in the Night.
Tell me, tell me nothing's wrong.
number three album was actually my number two album midway through the year. And it surpassed my number one album at the time, which was Prisoner, simply because there's never been a time in 2017 when I haven't wanted to hear this record. It's not higher simply because the next two records are just huge. But this album is one of my favorite records and one of my favorite shows I saw in 2017. It's Slow Dive's self-titled record, which came out in early May and has just been on in my rotation for the entire year. This is a masterpiece of shoegaze, wall of sound, melodic guitar, and noise. Live, these songs are like a warm blanket, and it's one of the most endearing and comforting shows I've ever seen. This is just their fourth album, but it's their first since 1995. They released three records in the early 90s and then broke up. You know, what really gets me about this album, beyond the music, is you expect certain things from a reunion LP, especially one that's this far from the band's initial conclusion. And this record is just not what you expect at all. There's a timeless quality to it. There's a confidence that so rarely comes from a reunion album. And there's overall a refinement to the band's sound that extends everything that they've accomplished in the 90s forward to today and, you know, potentially forward even from here. Slow-Mo is still my favorite album opener of the year. Star Roving is a top 10 song of the year for me. That's the song that we're going to play off of this. And that was their first single that came out in January and really reunited the world with Slow Dive. Sugar for the Pill is a perfect blend of dream pop and shoegaze. It almost feels like a song that should be covered by Beach House at some point. And No Longer Making Time really solidifies this album as I think the prettiest record of the year overall. Dave, this was an album that I think you featured in one of our very, very early new album recommendations, and you really turned me on to. And I had listened to Slow Dive, and I was aware of this record, but you had some really great things to say about it. I know that this was a favorite of yours.
Yeah, this album, like I said, was certainly in my top 10. It's just most bands don't produce something this good in this epic 22, 23 years after the fact. Yeah. So the fact to me that they had more to say, they knew it was going to be good, this doesn't feel like a perfunctory reunion. It feels inspired.
Totally.
Unfortunately, the few handful of times that they came to New York City, I was either out of town or had a conflict, so I did not get to see them live. Hopefully this isn't the end. Hopefully there's another album in the offering and I will certainly get to see them. But, you know, just in terms of shoegaze 101, I mean, the shoegaze sound, it's really easy to get a bunch of effects pedals and whisper into a mic, but it's difficult to make it this rewarding and this melodic.
Yes.
As if you go into Bandcamp and you look under the shoegaze category, you're going to find a lot of shitty bands. I'm sorry.
It's true. I mean,
Slow Dive is not one of these. Like, you need more than just a gigantic pedal board to get the job done, and they do. We'll be right back. Enjoyed that snippet of Star Roving by Slow Dive. So, I have for my number three record, not a huge surprise, the National Sleep Well Beast. Let's just say that I'm a big proponent of playing to one's strengths. And I think more so than any other band I can think of, the National play to their strengths. They have a sound. They know exactly what they need to sound like. They know how to make it sound good. They don't try to do stupid things like incorporate hip-hop or weird drum and bass electronica rhythms into their songs. They just, at their heart, are very good songwriters that make a very good set of songs that kind of deal with things like aging and parenting, and just in particular on this record, the act of marriage and the push and pull in marriage and things like compromise. But I guess with every National record, you say, okay, they've pushed their sound as far as they can go. The next one is going to have to sound different, or it's going to start to sound cheap and I'm going to get bored. Well, this National record basically sounds like the two ones that came before it. The difference is it has a bit more in the warm, bit more drum machines, electronic bleeps and bloops, some programming. It's not so much a major overhaul as some tweaks. It's sort of, I guess, them trying to unbutton a few buttons on their shirt, but within 5 minutes of listening to it, this couldn't be mistaken from anything other than a National record. What's kind of neat is that the drum machines, when they're used, they often get met with like real drums, and you want to have real drums because Brian Devendorf is one of the best drummers in indie rock and roll. He leads this band with his Marshall rhythms. Between him and Scott Devendorf, his brother, it's a very potent rhythm section. And, you know, Matt Berninger, in the lyrics, he just has yet to run out of a bottomless bag of tales about domestic life. And I'm not surprised I like this album as much as I do. It didn't quite get me quite as much as first as Trouble Will Find Me, but I think it also has a lot less filler than that album and will continue to grow. I keep coming back to A Basis for Comparison. It sounds to me a lot like Yola Tango's And Nothing Turned Itself Inside Out, which is also their dark, domestic, kind of bliss album. Like that album, I don't think it's autobiographical, between Ira Kaplan and his wife, Georgia Hubley, is also in the band. But, you know, there's some domestic strife in that record. There's certainly some in this National album. And although, you know, Berninger has said this isn't autobiographical, it's about as much as being in a relationship as it is being in a band. Who knows? But, you know, certainly in addition to being a great studio band, like I said earlier, they've evolved into a potent live act, and one that is actually even bigger in Europe than they are here. They play larger venues in Europe. They kind of vary the set list more in Europe, which is interesting because, you know, those Europeans, they get written about in the NME and Mojo and Uncut, and they sort of gravitate towards like charismatic frontmen like Matt Berninger. But in any event,
they played all of Boxer in Europe.
Yes.
First time they've ever done that, I think.
In Brussels, that's right. They had to cancel one Brussels show because I think they got an offer to play at a President Obama event. And then they decided to make it up to Brussels by playing a larger venue and then playing Boxer front to back, which, if you go into the show and you have no idea they're going to play Boxer front to back, and they do, yeah, you can die happy.
I got to say as well, 12 years apart, we've got kind of the bookend of American political life with Mr. November closing out Alligator and being used at a ton of Obama rallies in 2007, 2008, and Turtleneck, which is one of my favorite anti-Trump songs that's been written this year.
Yeah, just a man in shitty suits.
Yep.
What's the lyric? This is the genius that we've been waiting for.
This is the genius that we've been waiting for. Yeah. That and the man in the shitty seats. It's really
before they leave their cell phones in the bathrooms of the rich. And
yes, yes, yes.
So, any event, let's play a song from that album. I'm going to play "The System Only Sleeps in Total Darkness." That was the first single off the album, and recently used on an episode of This Is Us.
Quick break here in between our top five. We've got a couple more BTP community contributions for you, and we're going to talk with you a bit about some fish, because hey, we are ostensibly a fish podcast. But before we get to that, so we got Ben Greenfield, who tweets at G4JOPT. This is a guy who runs Online Fish Tour, a really smart guy in the fish community, excellent fish opinions, soon to be father, and we are in works to have him on Beyond the Pond here in 2018. We're very excited about that. He came at us with Laura Marling's Semper Femina, LCD Sound System's American Dream, Kamasai Washington's Truth EP, which is an excellent EP that came out earlier this year, OC's Orc, and Charlotte Gainsbourg's Rest, which was a record I had not fully absorbed at this point, but is a really, really heavy, heavy, heavy listen. But no particular order there for Ben, but some great, great selections for you guys.
So coming up next, we have a submission from my good buddy, PJ Rudolph, who is on the Twitter as @Axela_Part3. So at his five, at number five, he's got Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, Soul of a Woman. Rest in peace, Sharon Jones. Number four, Songhoi Blues, Resistance. Album I'm not that familiar with, but need to listen to. Number three, Kurt Vile and Courtney Barnett, Lot of Sea Lice, excellent record. Number two, War on Drugs, Deeper Understanding. And number one, King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, Sketches of Brunswick East, which, God, I want to say is like the fourth of the five records that they put out so far in 2017, though not positive.
really just a slow clap here from Beyond the Pond for King Gizzard
and yes.
Wizard. We did not feature them nearly as much as we should have this year, but unbelievable output from that band. Really pushing for five. Did they do... I think that they still have one more that's coming out before the end of the year.
Yeah, the fifth came out last week. Polygon Wanderlander. Yeah.
Just unbelievable. Well done, guys. Into our next selection here, we got one of my close friends, Rob Brennan, who tweets at Robert P. Brennan. Number five for him, we've got Wild Pink's Wild Pink. It's our self-titled record. Number four, 68, Two Parts Viper. Number three, Prepare Your Drinking Chalice. Drink right now, because we have the War on Drugs, A Deeper Understanding. Number two, The National Sleep Well Beast. You are sensing a theme here, aren't you, Dave?
And, my God.
And number one, the great thing is we've got like-minded friends and listeners here. We're all one big happy family. Number one, we've got Sampha with Process.
It's so high up in mountains I heard. I'm made out of plastic, I heard.
And ostensibly, because this is really a fish podcast, I mean, that's the basis for us. We're going to throw you a bone here, and we're going to feature our favorite show of 2017 from Fish. We kind of left this open. This could be a show that either we saw or we didn't see. Kind of where we are at this point in 2017, what's our favorite show, knowing full well that the holiday run hasn't happened yet, and there's probably going to be one or two great shows that come out of that. But I thought pretty hard about this. I saw six shows in 2017. I would say four of them were top tier Fish shows I've ever seen. But the one I keep coming back to, I didn't totally expect to at the time, because it was the first Fish show I saw of the year, 7/28/2017 Double Chocolate. This is, you know, I really think that 7/30 and 9/1 were probably the best shows, in quotes, that I saw. This is the one I just keep returning to. It's got an excellent set list, loads of energy, there's amazing jamming, there's a proper amount of humor. It's just a real all-around solid, high-quality show. It's kind of one of those shows that you would just give to someone if you wanted to introduce them to Fish, because it has a little bit of everything. The chocolate ass-handed opener is pure Fish hilarity. The free touches type 2. The dogs and Destiny Unbound in the middle of set, first set. You got a good amount of rarities there. A full-on type 2 sand that closes set 1. It's really just an excellent way to kick off the middle weekend of the Baker's Dozen. And coming off of two excellent midweek shows, one of which being the Jam-Filled show, this was a really proper way to start the second weekend at Madison Square Garden. Set 2 is near perfect. This was the first Have Mercy I'd ever seen. The Chalk Dust Torture is one of the top 10 jams of the year without question. And, you know, in a summer of, and I would say in all caps here, perfect covers that the band unveiled, You Sexy Thing is one of the best. That it jams and segues directly into Mercury, which then jams and segues.
Mercury Way.
and segues right back into You Sexy Thing. I mean, this is, I think, the fishiest thing I saw all summer long. I was actually behind the stage at the show. It was the first time I've ever been behind the stage at a Fish show, and I would highly, highly recommend it. And the number line that they played, it really confirmed for me that Phish fans who rag on Numberline don't know what the fuck they're talking about. Like I said, I sat behind the stage. I watched the entire floor lose their mind through this performance. There's a reason, guys, that Trey plays Numberline like every three shows. Yes, it saved the band. It brought Phish back together. But you all have a fucking smile on your face when Phish plays Numberline, and there's a reason for it.
It's the Sugar Magnolia. Phish fans who rag on Numberline or the Dead fans who rag on Sugar Magnolia. Come on.
There's not a single person that is not dancing and has a smile on their face when they play that song. I don't care who you are always happy during that song. The encore, Fee, Space Oddity, just an excellent cap to the show. Really fun show overall. If you've been listening to the Lawn Boy or the Cross-Eyed and Painless on repeat, I would say dip into 728 and you'll find a lot in that show that you'll really enjoy.
Okay, I don't disagree with any of that. That was an incredible show. That Chalk to His Torture, how it goes full on Harry Hood at the end. Just awesome, awesome. Maybe top 10 Chalk to His Torture ever. But the one I have actually for my favorite show thus far of 2017 would be the show before, which would be Powdered Night, which was night 5, July 26th of 2017. I was at this night, and I was also at Jamfield the night before. And after that, I said, how on earth are Phish going to top that? I'm not necessarily sure if they topped it, but the fact that they were able to pull such an incredibly quality show one night after on a Wednesday night in New York City with that second set. I still think the second set of Powdered Night is the best, my favorite second set of the Baker's Dozen. I mean, you got the huge Dark Korean to start with the Mystic Completely teases. Mr. Completely into 1999 into arguably the brightest, most upbeat, shining jam that I've heard them play in ages. Maybe the best version of Steam ever. I mean, by far the most Pink Floyd-y. Then you've got No Quarter, the Character Zero with the very amusing duel between, between Trey and Mike. And then for the encore for Powdered Night, I turned to my buddy that night, who is actually PJ Rudolph, Axel3 on Twitter. We both thought that they were going to play Powderfinger because sometimes the most obvious choice is the best choice. And that didn't make it any less cathartic when he played that opening chord and sang the opening line. It just felt so goddamn good. And the first set really is no slouch either. I mean, it's got opens with their acoustic a cappella version of the Fleet Foxes' White Winter Hymnal, then Cars, Trucks, and Buses, My Soul, whatever. It was fine in context, but the first Pebbles and Marbles and God Knows How Long. And also the tube jam is phenomenal. That's like a 14-minute, extremely interesting tube. We actually covered an earlier Beyond the Pond episode. I think we compared it to some Manchester, like Happy Mondays, Charlatans music. That's probably between that and The Lawn Boy in the 1999, that tube is one of the top 5 jams I go back to the most. Just because it's compact and rocking and very type 2 and fantastic in all the ways I hope that all my tubes are.
You know, it's interesting. So, it's pretty amazing. The Baker's Dozen, for all the superlatives we could say, there were a lot of things that happened that you never would have expected happen before the Baker's Dozen. I think I could be wrong about this. I could just be forgetting it. But I think the most unexpected thing that happened in the entire 13 shows was that they fucking played 1999. Like,
yeah,
ever
really
thought that they would ever play that song again. There was no context for them to play it again. There was no reason for them to play it again. And it just, and yeah, you're right. Like, the jam that came off of that was absolutely spectacular.
Right. It was ragged, but it was Dance Party USA ragged.
Completely.
It was... at some point, I think, I don't know, someone told me, I didn't really see this, that Trey goes to Paige and says, who knows lyrics for this song? I'd have to do some better lip reading. But it was... I didn't really... When I heard it, I didn't pick up on it until like a minute and 30 seconds in, because there was no reason to think they'd ever play it ever again.
Daddy is gone.
Wrapping up here before we get back into our countdown, we've got a couple, a few more from the community, from our listeners here. So we got Paul Saylor, who tweets at Coltrane1973. His number five record, His Call the Messenger, Hallelujah Anyhow. I've already said it. This is a fantastic record. If you haven't heard it, really warm, amazing stuff. Number four, The Weather Station, self-titled album. Three, Father John Misty, Pure Comedy. Two, Kendrick Lamar's Damn. And number one, Raise a Glass, The War on Drugs, A Deeper Understanding.
I'm seeing double.
And in the morning, when you rock, Rouge Blue throwing ashes on the water. It's a strange tweak and light to be lost out in the darkness of the border.
So right now, next we have Ryan Smith. He tweets at rsmith0603. He's got, I guess this is a tie for number five. He has Japan Droids, Near to the Wild Heart of Life. That actually came out pretty early, I think, in 2017, if I can't recall.
That was
recall.
One of the first releases of the year, yeah.
Right. Very good album. I don't like it quite as much as Celebration Rock, but still a very good record. And the one he has tied with that is Gang of Youths, Go Farther in Lightness. Number four, Kendrick Lamar, Damn. Number three, War on Drugs, Deeper Understanding. Number two, Ryan Adams, Prisoner. Number one, The National, Sleepwell Beast.
My very own brother, Kevin Brinkman, at Mr. Brinkles. Number five, Noam Pinkley, Universal favorite. Number four, Jamila Woods, Heaven. Number three, and the award goes to War on Drugs, A Deeper Understanding. Number two, The National, Sleep Well Beast. And number one, he and I debated this heavily throughout the summer and fall, but this record completely captivated him, Fleet Foxes, Crack Up.
I like the Fleet Foxes a lot. I've got to give that album more of a chance. I like Third of May a whole lot. But
I think
Robin Pecknold is so deep into his head, he's never coming back.
I think that's a record that's really going to... It's one of those things you got to hear 10, 15, 20 times, and you need a good road trip with it.
Okay, I could buy into that.
How could it all fall in one day?
So transitioning, we're in the home stretch here, folks. So I've got my number two album of the year. This is a guy I know I've mentioned before in the past. I certainly mentioned him on the podcast we did with HF Pod. It's a guy named Ron Gallo. Album is called Heavy Meta. And I think top to bottom, this is my favorite pure rock and roll album of 2017. In particular, the first song, Young Lady, You're Scaring Me. It's probably my favorite rock song in 2017. I'll listen to it hundreds of times. It gets me pumped up. It's almost corny to say that it could work well as if I was a closer on a baseball team, I'd want to exit the bullpen to this song. In particular, the opening three songs in this album being Young Lady, You're Scaring Me, and Put the Kids to Bed, and then Kill the Medicine Man are just a triptych of twangy rock and roll awesome. He's got a really good sense of humor, too, like a very dry sense of humor. He's got the song Why Do You Have Kids, where it's kind of a slice of life, almost questioning people that he sees that really have no business ever having children. And I can relate to this all too well. But really, it's a trio. They're called the RG3, which is funny in of itself. He's from Philadelphia. I don't know if he specifically called it that to troll the Washington Redskins with Robert Griffin III. I kind of hope that he did. But just top to bottom, this is a kick-ass rock record. He plays a really mean guitar. He's got a great twang to his vocals. He has incredible hair. He's really good in interviews. He's good on Twitter. It's just really a complete package. And if you like rock and roll, you've got to check out Ron Gallo as soon as humanly possible. And the song we're going to play is Young Lady, You're Scaring Me.
An album that was introduced to me by you, Dave, and I have not seen this album covered in the American music press outside of Stephen Hyden of the Celebration Rock podcast and uprocks.com. This is an unbelievable band, an unbelievable album. Gang of Youths Go Farther in Lightness. To be short, this album is why I listen to music. It's why I listen to 300 plus new records every year. It's why I've been writing about or talking about music my entire life. It's why I run a music podcast with you, Dave. It's to find an album like this. This is the same sort of reason why we go to hundreds of fish shows to see a Fuck Your Face show. You want to find something that just like connects on every level and hits your wheelhouse and just shocks you on the first listen. I don't know why this album hasn't been covered in the States. They could be America's next greatest rock band, but they should be on all of our listeners' radars. Hearing it for the first time in early November completely bowled me over. And really, it's a fusion of literally everything I love in music. You've got Springsteen, you've got The War on Drugs, you've got classic rock, concept albums, ultra sincere lyrics, punk rock, road trip heartland rock. I mean, I could go on. This is my wheelhouse. At 75 minutes, Go Farther in Lightness is definitely an exhausting listen. I actually featured this on our Twitter feed. We're covering every Fall 97 show, and I compared this to the 11/19/97 Wolfman's Brother, because this album, like that, is certainly an indulgent experience. And lead singer Dave Lepape, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. I'm probably totally butchering that. But he said at one point he's not going to make a 40-minute trite record. He's going to make 75-minute albums because he's only going to live once. My God, is this 75 minutes worth listening to over and over and over again? The opening track, Fear and Trembling, it's as if Jungleland opened Born to Run. And don't yell at me. I know Thunder Road is the perfect opener for that album. But just imagine it being opened by Jungleland. It's an interesting concept. Second track, What Can I Do If the Fire Burns Out? This is a redemptive anthem here for 2017. Do Not Let Your Spirit Wane, Persevere are everything I needed to hear and remind myself of here in 2017, and are insanely deep for a 24-year-old to have written. Side note, lead singer, not even going to butcher his name again, but he's been married, he's seen his wife battle cancer, he's gotten divorced from said wife, he's seen her pass away, he's battled drug addiction, and he's battled his own suicidal tendencies, all in his short time, and he wrote an album of this much power. It's insane to me. I really fail to think of a bigger moment on a record in 2017 than when the song Le Symbolique fades right into Let Me Down Easy, which is the song that we're going to play off this album. It's my top two or three favorite song of the year, and it's just an excellent, excellent statement about three quarters of the way through the record. Finally, and just to wrap it up, this is a band that's going to be reckoned with. If they're not headlining music festivals in the United States in 2 to 3 years, something has clearly gone wrong with this band. Because they just won a ton of awards down in Australia, where they're originally from. I believe like the Australian Rock Music Awards. I forget exactly what they're called, but they won, like they swept the entire ballot down there. And they've got to come up here to the States, and they've got to do a proper tour. Excellent, excellent rock band. So I hope that you enjoy Let Me Down Easy, and I hope that you dig into Go Farther in Lightness.
Thank you.
Okay, that was Gang of Utes with Let Me Down Easy off of the album Go Farther and Lightness. Just to say that the first time I ever heard about this album was listening to the Sound Opinions podcast. It was that's the podcast based out of Chicago with the veteran Chicago music critics Greg Kot and Jim DeRogatis. I tend to agree with them more often than not. I know they have an episode usually twice a year where they talk about Diamonds in the Rough, and that was an album.
Yes, yes.
Right. That was one of the albums that I guess Greg Kot talked about as being a diamond in the rough and huge in Australia, competing with the likes of like Queens of the Stone Age for like number one and whatnot, and really hadn't made a semblance of a dent here in the States.
I think he said he saw them at a club in Chicago and there was like 50 people scattered throughout there, and this was July.
It's mind-blowing. I mean, Australia has a history of epic bands, be it AC/DC or Midnight Oil or, I guess, NXS even. But, you know, so, but that actually provides a very good segue to my number one, because I have an artist who I also heard about on the Buried Treasures episode of Sound Opinions. This was somebody who was presented by Jim DeRogatis. I've talked about him on the podcast before. I am talking about another guy who grew up outside of Princeton, New Jersey, Luke Elliott. He is a 33-year-old singer-songwriter who doesn't know from comfort. In every picture, he's wearing a suit or a blazer jacket, staring off into the distance, looking like a bit of a tough guy, kind of taking after certain idols, I'm guessing, like Leonard Cohen and Nick Cave. This guy, he's a crooner. And his stock and trade is these big story songs and a big baritone. I think probably his main instrument would be the piano. He also plays some guitar. But on his most recent album, Dress for the Occasion, he has a variety of very big backing band, lots of strings, lots of things like mariachi guitar. There's even a very good pedal steel guitar player at times. This was an album he actually recorded with the producer John Agnello in Norway, of all places. He has not really broken in the States yet. By some happenstance, getting involved with the publicist in Scandinavia, he recorded this album in Norway. He put it out there, and it was quite the hit in Scandinavia and certainly parts of Europe. It came out in the States this past August. I know he went on sort of a tour of small clubs. I wasn't able to catch him, unfortunately, when he was here in New York recently. This guy, this album, I think it marks the introduction of a very major talent. He's just a consummate songwriter with a big voice. And this album, I was listening to it in the car with my wife, and the car has terrible speakers, and she just said, the album sounds really good. It's very well produced. It's well mixed. You can hear a variety of different instruments. It's just, from top to bottom, it's an incredibly well-formed statement. I know he's had some EPs before this one. This was his first full-length album. He's got, there's the title track is a like spaghetti western. The songs Blue and Green and Let It Rain on Me are these big piano led torch songs. He has my favorite song on the record, The Great Rondon Train Robbery, is actually a story song telling the true story of the Newton Gang, who like to rob trains in the Midwest in the 1920s. There's a cover of Tim Hardin's Reason to Believe. It's just, if you're interested in like a great American singer-songwriter like a Leonard Cohen, like a Nick Cave, although I realize that he's from Australia, obviously, you really owe it to yourself to check out Luke Elliott. I hope that he comes back to the States sooner than later. I think his next tour is going to be of Europe. And if there's any justice in the world, he's going to hit it big, because to me, the guy really seems to be that talented. And the song we're going to play is The Great Rondon Train Robbery. And I think probably next to the Ron Gallo song we played, this would be my most played song in 2017.
Your eyes, they look so very troubled. The sweat on your brow is a heavy weight. We've been talking about train robbers, vagabonds and spinning plates. Production is always too slow. When there's someone in need, there's no law to be considered.
Thank you for that selection there, Dave. Luke Elliott, as I said at the top of my 1 to 10s, really, really great record that I'm... It feels like a proper drinking bourbon winter album, and I'm excited to grow with it as we go into 2018 here. Really, really excellent, excellent record here over the last few weeks for me. All right, my number one is The War on Drugs, A Deeper Understanding.
Really?
You were expecting something else. So here's the thing. Full disclosure. This is the first year since I really started ranking albums that I did not have a clear number one. I think I mentioned this to you, Dave, as we were planning this. My 1 through 4s could have probably been interchangeable on a given day. And as I had said earlier, my number 5 album of the year was my number 1 at the midway point in the year. That said, A Deeper Understanding is the record I anticipated the most, I listened to the most, I connected with the most. It was the record that I was most impressed with by this band's ability to overcome the immense pressure and expectations on them. I mean, Lost in the Dream was a fucking huge album, and it was a huge coming out party for a band that had, you know, really kind of risen the ranks in indie rock, but hadn't really made a statement piece yet. And they made a record in 2014 that was my favorite record of that year, and was a record that just blew so many people away, and they created an amazing or an incredible amount of new listeners for them. The fact that they were able to overcome that, and in recent weeks I've read interviews with Adam Granshiel, who says that he was just riveted by depression, both leading up to Lost in the Dream and then afterwards, because he didn't know how he was going to top it in any sort of way. So all of this, to craft a record that hones their sound and points the direction forward and really embraces studio alchemy in a way that they just didn't have the budget for prior to this album, for them to make a record as strong as this is so goddamn impressive. And it's something I just couldn't ignore as I was reviewing this list. This album opens with the strongest opening quartet of the band's career, and it peaks with Thinking of a Place and the song In Chains, which is probably my favorite 18 minutes of recorded music throughout 2017. The production of this album is leaps ahead of Lost in the Dream, and it's clear that the songs, writing these songs, learning how to play these songs, and then crafting them for a recording standpoint really helped the band in a live setting, because the two shows I saw them here in 2017 were way, way higher than what I saw them in 2014 and 2015. The second show, as I said earlier at the Anthem, was probably the best non-Fish show I saw a year. So, end of the day, this is a very predictable choice for me. I had a feeling that this band was going to have put out my number one record of the year, and, you know, they ended up doing it, and I can't fault them for it. I continuously want to listen to this record on repeat. Every time I hear it, I hear something new. And I just can't get over the fact that they topped all of the expectations going into the record and have crafted an album that I'm just so excited to listen to over the next couple of years in the same sort of way that Lost in the Dream has been for me. So the song that we are going to play off this album is Pain. It's the number two song on the album, and this is one of my favorite songs of the year. The guitar solo makes me want to cry every time I hear it. The lyrics, I've related to it quite a bit throughout the year. It's just incredibly well produced, very, very well put together song. And so War on Drugs, Deeper Understanding, my number one album of 2017.
Off of the Deeper Understanding album. So if you got into this point in the podcast, thank you very much. Just to recap, what we've done is we started off by talking about some of our favorite non-Phish live concerts that we saw in 2017. We also highlighted some of the top five lists from members of the Beyond the Pond community. We also had the honorable mentions, and then we went through our top 10 lists. Instead of recapping the individual songs, what we're going to do at the same time this podcast launches, we're probably going to put together a about a 30-song best of 2017 playlist, and we will put together the link for that, and we'll put it on Twitter and our Medium page when that is available. And just a reminder of the social media links, we're on Twitter at underscore beyond the pond, one word, and on medium.com/beyond the pond. And the Spotify master playlist can be found at the Beyond the Pond podcast songs playlist. I think there's well over 100 songs at this point. I think The top 30 27 playlist is going to be separate, but you are more than welcome to smush the playlist together if that is your fancy.
Absolutely. And just quick note, thanks to everyone who gave us their top five albums of the year. We really appreciate it. This is our 20th episode, which I know, Dave, when we started talking about this itty-bitty podcast way back in February of this year, I would have been happy at the time if we had made five episodes. I think it's pretty fucking cool that not only have we gotten to 20, but we've got a good group of listeners here that are a part of the community that clearly there's a reason. A lot of you guys' lists reflected ours, and a lot of them gave some really cool albums that neither one of us have heard, and really contributes overall to the kind of mission of this podcast. So publishing structure, you guys know it by now. Every other Tuesday, Tuesdays have absolutely no feel. So every other Tuesday, you should celebrate with some new music and some fish jams and some deep dives. We have one more episode coming out here in 2017 that we are working on and we're pretty excited for. But 2018, man, we got a lot of stuff in the works. We kind of have this thing down to a science now. We've got some really great guests coming up that we are.
Speak for yourself.
we've got some great guests coming up here in 2018 that I'm very excited to share with you guys. I think you're all going to enjoy it. If you've enjoyed the episodes that we did here with Jonathan Hart and Josh Carver, as well as the guys from HF Pod. It's been fun to bring in some other people into our little world. So keep your eyes out for all that sort of stuff. And thanks everyone for listening. I hope that our list gave you some stuff to listen to here in 2017. And we're stoked to continue discovering music with you guys throughout the next year.
Suffice it to say, this pond is going to get extremely deep in 2018.
Quite deep.
And on that note, I'm David Goldstein.
I am Brian Brinkman.
Come back in 2 weeks. We'll once again join hands and join headphones and go beyond the pond.
There's a moose head hanging from a wall of bar at a nondescript part in the street. There's a long-haired boy making eyes at a John by the lamplights hung from the beams. We're at the stumbling phase of the midnight walls at the bookend of the weirdest of weeks. Me and Arnold walk pretty hammered and crying. Hey, I'll miss you, man, when you leave. Hey, I'll miss you when you leave. Cause there are feelings that are strong and there are ones that are missed at the dawn of my young life's eclipse. I was a boy once now, I'm a kind of adult, catching up on the cool shit I missed. Cause we were raised where the passes, they dance in the aisles, with a mosh pit up front full of years. So if faith is to lose the mind to win God, then I guess I got nothing to prove. I guess I got nothing to prove.